This is the Cassis Climate Briefing Podcast, Episode 3, Data.
Nearly half of humanity is living in the danger zone now. Many ecosystems are at the point of no return now. Unchecked carbon pollution is forcing the world's most vulnerable on a frog march to destruction now.
That's UN Secretary General Antonio Guterres introducing the latest report on the UN's Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change. Throughout this series, we've talked about reaching targets such as net zero. But how do we really understand such figures, analyse impacts and changes within the investment sector? The answer is through data. We are constantly bombarded with the same buzzwords of innovation, the holy trinity of artificial intelligence, machine learning and big data. Kenneth Couquier, a senior editor at The Economist and author of the New York Times bestseller, Big Data, sees how important it is.
Big data is an extremely important tool by which society is going to advance. And when you think about it, the only way this planet is going to deal with its global challenges, to feed people, supply them with medical care, supply them with energy, and to make sure they're not burnt to a crisp because of global warming, is because of the effective use of data.
Within the investment industry, the level of exposure to potential risks due to climate change is staggering. To put this in context, almost 40% of companies in the S&P Global 1200 Index hold assets at high risk of physical climate change impacts. Be it wildfires, water stress, heat waves and hurricanes linked to increasing global average temperatures. So understanding the data is essential for comprehending risk, but also to help understand what good and ethical investment looks like.
The pensions industry ignores data and its use at its peril.
Richard Howes is the head of Wealth, Life and Pensions, UK and Ireland, at Experian.
So the reality is most companies have already got big data. The question is, are they using it to their advantage and to the advantage of their customers or members?
This is the Cassis Climate Briefing. I'm Pat Sharman, Managing Director for Cassis in the UK. Our aim in this series of podcasts is to address the reality of climate change and how we move forward. We'll look at how things need to change for the pensions industry, whether we're trustees, asset managers or service providers. And we'll be asking what our collective responsibilities are. After all, we're in a powerful position to influence the behaviour of businesses for decades to come. But we've got to get it right. For this episode, I'm joined by Scott Foster, Head of Digital Governance Solutions at Cassis, Chandra Kobanathan, a Senior Investment Manager with Railpen, and David Hunter, CIO at Renewity. David, what I wanted to ask you just to kick off, what is your view on the data challenge within the financial services sector? And what do you think actually needs to happen?
I think first and foremost, I think people need to get on with it. The flurry about competing standards is a bit of a red herring. I think it's more important that schemes find the right framework over time. They're not going to find it on day one. And the meaningfulness, if you like, of that data is not going to be the same on day one as it is 3 years hence when you've accumulated a pattern of it. So it's understanding the direction of travel that the numbers give you rather than is this particular data item the right answer. So we hear lots of noises around, you know, standards for data being in dire need of harmonisation. I don't really want to bring that systemic risk to the table by having all of us focused on the single set of standards. I think it's a really good thing to have a bit of diversification in that as we go forward. It diversifies that systemic risk, if nothing else, but more particularly, it gets people off the seat and gets them doing something. And, you know, waiting for organisations to coalesce into some standard is just missing the point, really, I think.
Scott, data is your day job, more or less. So from your perspective, how do we encourage pension schemes to at least make a start with, you know, actually looking at these risks, climate risks in particular?
I think in terms of how do we get the ball rolling, you know, it's working within the models and assumptions of your data vendor, your data supplier, wherever that may come from, having a good grip and understanding of the sort of methodologies of the provider and where you do have gaps so you can ask the right questions, defining the targets that you want to set, focus on the impacts that you want to see and achieve as a scheme, and define what decision useful metrics you'd like to see and track over periods of time. And I think the key thing on the data point, even though it is an imperfect science is that data must be transparent, consistent in methodology, and comparable across the various funds in which you invest across your portfolio. Eventually, we'll come to the point where it'll need to be verifiable and potentially even auditable. But until we get to that point, making a start early, getting your hands on what data is available on climate change metrics, you know, TCFD alignment data, as well as that ESG and potential controversies data, if you've got a exclusion policy within your scheme, you know, can be a very good start to help define the baseline of where your scheme's at in terms of your ESG risks, your climate change exposure in carbon metric tons, and that would be a good starting place.
So Chandra, how important is it to define a data strategy?
I think in this day and age where we are in an age of smartphones and extreme terabytes and multibytes of data beyond, I think having a clear data strategy for any firm and any business is pretty crucial. I think for pension schemes, asset owners and investment managers, it's about investment and financial data. Now, climate is a key financial risk. We've all acknowledged it. So there's climate and ESG data as well, which becomes a subset of this data set. So it's very important to have an overall data strategy. You need reliable data. You need granular data. You need the data to be decision useful. You need it to be timely. All of these sorts of things. And it's important that the climate and ESG portion particularly integrates well into the overall investment or the overall business data strategy and framework as a whole. Sim.
And Scott, your view?
I would say that the real question is, who's my ESG data partner? Where am I going to get those ESG data points and risks on climate change, things like human rights, labor rights, environmental issues, and corporate governance, and as well as that, you know, any sort of controversial sort of product involvement data points as well. So who am I going to partner with there? And as well as that, you know, where is that sort of portfolio holdings data going to come from as well? You know, that's typically held by a custodian, your fund administrator, and that's another piece of the puzzle that you've got to connect to create a sort of complete report of your ESG risks, your climate change risks across your, you know, entire portfolio in a consistent and meaningful way. I think that's the key challenge, particularly around sort of aggregating carbon intensity metrics. You know, feedback that we've got from the industry recently is that if you're collecting data across various providers, you know, aggregating up those intensity scores becomes a challenge. So, you know, who's going to take on that job and that work as well?
And how does the actual TCFD fit into all of this?
The TCFD is not a regulation. It is a framework. It's a set of principles. It's a guide, if you will. And in the UK, you know, pension schemes are being asked to, from a regulatory perspective, adopt the TCFD principles and framework. And I think the TPR has stipulated a few metrics that are within the realm of the TCFD in terms of climate change that trustees should adopt and report on and pass on to its members to account for all those climate change risks.
Chandra?
I'd say the question is actually the reverse, where how does this data strategy fit into TCFD? Mm-hmm. Because TCFD is really a framework to help trustees and stakeholders understand climate risks and opportunities of their portfolio. And a data strategy and the outputs of that data strategy could be quite useful to paint the complete picture. So whether you're talking about governance, you could talk about data governance. When you're talking about and climate data governance in particular, when you're talking about strategy, you could talk about various different aspects of what you're looking at on the emissions footprint, carbon footprint, all of those things, which also kind of overlaps with the metrics and targets bit. And in terms of risk management, data is a big part of risk management. I mean, understanding which parts of your portfolio emit the most amount of carbon and what needs more engagement and needs more decarbonizing is much easily shown when you have a clear data picture and you have some quantification around, okay, which companies, which portfolios, which assets are the dirtiest of the lot. So I think it fits quite well to the overall TCFD format, and I think it informs and sort of steers in its own specific way. So having that data strategy can be actually a huge sort of supplement to the TCFD report itself.
And what do you think the other data factors are that pension funds have to think about?
In terms of the other data factors, I think in the first instance, screening can really help get that baseline understanding of where you're at as a scheme, where your sort of exposure is. I think a lot of schemes and those in the industry sort of jump straight towards quantifying those risks and sort of pricing ESG and climate change risks. And that is a sort of big quantitative exercise that will take time. The models are imperfect, and the data's, as we know, not 100% there. And so basic screening on any ESG breaches in relation to controversial products, and calculating carbon metrics as far as you are able, and hopefully in line with the GHG protocol, is a good starting point. When you start to look at targets, perhaps, the SBTI, the Science-Based Targets Initiative, is definitely one to sort of lean on. And if you have a net zero policy, which a lot of schemes are starting to adopt and commit to, let's say by 2050, make sure that we have interim goals and are tracking how we're going to achieve those targets. We've got 28 years to go, but that will come soon and fast. And so making sure that you hit key interim targets, I think, will be really important to make sure that we aren't in a sort of disorderly transition scenario.
We've talked about data doesn't have to be perfect, David, but actually, if data isn't of good quality and isn't reasonably consistent, how can we ensure that we don't end up in a place where we're targeting something and we're on this transition sort of path, but actually the data that we've got is not good enough to help us to manage to get there?
The key is iteration. I think you have to move forward gingerly as quickly as possible, get a framework for review, a focus on what you can achieve and do, set some targets. Targets are there to be aimed at and usually missed, but that doesn't mean they don't have a value. They have a value in pulling your effort in the right direction. The key is that you get some data that works for you in the framework that you have set within the policy that you've agreed as trustees for, you know, net zero or something similar for 2050. But I think also that in reviewing data as you go through that process, it's not necessarily also the quality of the data and have you met your targets. The overall framework needs rebalancing, readdressing as you go forward, because, as I say, we're feeling our way forward. This is the first time in, you know, since we came out of the caves. And this is the first time humanity as a single party has said there's something not working properly for us as a whole, and we're going to superimpose upon our own development an external forcing of our economic activity through a tightening pipe of decarbonisation in a time period that is really the same as, you know, is equivalent to getting a baby to adulthood. It's in one generation we're going to take that trillions of economic activity. So that is not going to be a smooth journey. And part of the bumps on the road that we will encounter will be our own management and perception of how well we're doing. And so being realistic about what we can do with that data and making sure we're not vulnerable to being driven in our behaviours to satisfy the data thresholds that we set ourselves. We have to take a bit of that, but it's really not, it's the fundamentals we're after, not the representation of them just in some arbitrary data set that we've pulled together. So I think we have to just keep doing our best to iterate what we think of as a science, but it is also got this social angle that, you know, we just cannot remove. It's not a total science because it involves human beings and they're not always the best scientific experiment to play with.
So Scott, from your perspective, you know, anything else to add for pension trustees and what they should be thinking about?
Probably a few takeaways and maybe a bit of light at the end of the tunnel in terms of standards and initiatives that a scheme could sign up to and pick up data on today. On the ESG risks, the UN Global Compact is a very useful sort of screening tool which you can use, and there's widely available data to screen against any human rights, labour rights, environmental issues and corporate governance issues across the various holdings within your portfolio. So that's a good initial screening initiative that you could start doing today and get data on today. On controversies, you can get access to over 30 different types of controversial sin products, if you will, things like oil and gas exposure, things like tobacco, animal testing. And I think in terms of the role of the regulator and the role of governments on ESG and data quality. There's a rise in the adoption of localized taxonomies. So, you know, everyone talks about the EU taxonomy. There will be a UK taxonomy coming down the pipe. There is already an ASEAN taxonomy, and you're seeing quite a bit of alignment between those overarching taxonomies, which are basically trying to commonly define what is green, what is each company's contribution to environmental objectives, you know, what impact are they trying to make. And as well as that, there's a Do No Significant Harm initiative, which is basically mitigating against negative impact. So I think that is something that will definitely help and guide countries, pension funds, corporates. And of course, the last point I would say around data is pension schemes, asset owners are constantly being bombarded with ESG materials, product information, marketing materials, and we'll probably need some protection around that as well. I mean, that's where things like SFDR come in, around product labeling and making sure we aren't being missold products. Well, so there are three overarching frameworks at a sort of government level, country level, corporate level, and then product level as well that will help boost ESG data availability and standardization across the industry. We're talking about within 12 to 18 months, these things sort of coming to light. Adopting them will take a bit more time as well. Let's add it there. But it's just a sprinkle of hope to help push things along. And so, Pat, just on that, a question to you, you know, as a small DC trust-based scheme, you know, what's your direct experience been like in reviewing your scheme's exposure to ESG and climate risks?
Oh, thank you for that, Scott. I think that the start for us was as trustees, we sort of looked at each other a few years back and it was actually, where do we start? We only invest in pooled funds. So again, very different. We don't necessarily have sight of the assets within the pooled funds. So we started with actually saying, let's screen the pooled funds that we're invested. And we screened against things like the UN Compact Principles so we could understand, do any of our assets, have they breached against any of those principles on the E, S and G? We looked at controversial sectors. So was the scheme exposed to any of those controversial sectors? So tobacco, oil and gas, arms. So anything that might us as trustees actually maybe alarm us so that we just had the knowledge and understand. And we also looked at more recently, in the last year, we actually used a screening product that could actually screen for our carbon emissions. So the footprint, the intensity, and we looked at it across the funds, sectors and by individual assets. And you'd probably say, well, that's great, Pat. You're a small DC trust-based scheme. You invest in pooled funds. What can you actually do? Well, what we did is the first year we did this, we met the asset manager, had a great discussion, but they sent in the relationship manager to come and talk to us. The second year, we got the specialist in front of us because I think they suddenly realised that there was a pension scheme, might be small, but actually could ask some quite specific questions around, hang on a minute, it looks like I've got a fairly significant exposure to a controversial sector here. Can you tell me about how you're managing that as a risk and potentially an opportunity? How are you engaging with that company? Can you talk to me about what engagement you've had recently with that company? How did you vote at the last AGM? For us, it just allowed a conversation between us and the asset manager. So as trustees, we might not have direct influence about where the asset manager invests, but at least we have a good understanding. And if we find something that we're not happy with, so i.e. too much exposure to a controversial sector that we don't feel comfortable with, at least we could actually say, actually, we want to disinvest from that fund. So it's given us the confidence that we have a better understanding of our exposures, maybe from a risk and an opportunity perspective, and that these risks are being managed by the asset manager. And we've done this by starting with that good quality, independent, consistent data. And OK, we know there's gaps, we know it's not perfect, but it's a starting point and it's certainly given us confidence as trustees for a small scheme that we are undertaking our fiduciary responsibility.
That's amazing in terms of the kind of structured approach that you've taken. I mean, I don't that pretty much goes to tell you that it's not really about size of the scheme. It's really about the trustees taking the initiative and dealing with the external managers just as you have in terms of holding them accountable, asking for the right kinds of questions and the right kind of information, and being able to get that data. And that process, and it's a testament and well done, I'd say, because that big or small, you do have the ability and the control and the power to be able to extract that information from asset managers and be able to report on that. That's pretty commendable.
And I think Scott's got a saying about start small, think big.
Yeah, dream big, but start small, and more importantly, start today.
You've been listening to the CACEIS Climate Briefing. For the next episode, we'll be discussing how climate risk is assessed. I'm Pat Sharman. Goodbye.